Just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
The chores.
The stores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
Free Farm Friday has become a staple around here. Invite all your friends and family members. We talk about getting back to living from and on and with the land. That's right. Here's a picture in the chat room because people like in pictures. Buddy Ebsen as Jed Clampett. Wee doggies. It's Friday, y'all. Hey, before I get injured quickly, that's from Donald in Dysonia. Don, you know, Don, I met Buddy Ebsen once, and he was the most affable, likable guy. He's a dude. Buddy Ebsen is like 6'4". He was a big man. A big, huggable, lovable teddy bear of a country boy turned actor. In any event, this Free Farm Friday, we got a lot to talk about here today. We're going to talk about drought, heat, how to deal with drought and heat. And then, what did the Sri Lankan farmers get wrong that led to them now facing actual starvation on the island? Well, they got almost everything wrong. All right, here with our Free Farm Friday, or we're also going to talk about that jerk who put that tweet up on Twitter yesterday admonishing mom and pop local businesses who are out of touch with reality, and everyone should go online and big box until the idiot mom and pops go international monopoly price schedules. Mr. Brian Koch is here from Wharton, Texas. A degree in biology. He's a master of the soil and one of our master farmers in regenerative farming. Mr. Koch, how are you today?
I'm doing outstanding. How are you, Mr. Church?
I am well, very well. Also, Mr. Dan Mundy from Central Northern New Jersey, who is also a master farmer. And both gentlemen spoke at the Fellowship of the Clans Congress. You can get both of their talks on video, and you should. Go to shop.mikechurch.com. Don't watch garbage television this weekend. Go watch the Congress. You missed it? Well, no. Go to get a front row seat. Go buy the videos while they're on sale for 75% off shop.mikechurch.com. Mr. Mundy, how are you?
I'm very good, sir. How are you gentlemen today?
We are well. We are well. Let's first talk about what is happening in Sri Lanka, Dan Mundy. Seems to me that the government of Sri Lanka encouraged the Sri Lankan farmers, and the Sri Lankan farmers took the poor advice of all the Western civilization establishment farmers and turned their farms basically into fields filled with chemical fertilizers, and then now they're facing starvation as a result.
Well, they certainly encouraged them to practice modern Western agriculture, but what I've been studying on it and trying to figure out is, we always like to akin the repeat of history. I'm beginning to wonder if this isn't Spain before the Second World War. It's like, okay, well, we taught you to do this. Now we're going to pretend to teach you the Green New Deal stuff, and let's see how it really works in a little isolated area. So it's they've pretty much devastated them. And, you know, I've had that discussion with several people today, as a matter of fact. I don't know, it must be the air around here. Where they say, oh, they're doing this to us. I said, they don't do anything to us. We let them do this to us. That's, you know, learn to take responsibility for it. That's the first thing. But they I'm trying to see here is okay. You read a little about Sri Lanka. I mean, you know, they're also very, very limited in, you know, a lot of agriculture. Most of the people are engaged in it, but there are only a few large products that they use to manage their GDP, like tea and stuff. So you only got a couple of things, and you got a bunch of monocultures, and you got people who are trying to use you as an experiment. And I think that's my summing up of what's going on down there, sir.
Yeah, 1/3 of the farmlands lay dormant in 2021, and 65% of the farmers faced crop losses. Small farmers bore the brunt of the burden and reported a 50 to 60% decrease in yield. This is after the nitrogen was going to, they basically, Sri Lanka banned nitrate fertilizers, Brian.
Yeah, and you're seeing that over and over, and I kind of had a train of thought on there. I don't know if you remember, it's been a few years ago, how they eliminated phosphate out of laundry detergent.
Yep.
It's kind of the same thing. They're trying to avoid these nutrients getting into the water and causing algae blooms because they've basically destroyed all the wetlands and everything else that would naturally take these things out. So by levying and destroying wetlands and everything else, you know, you're doing the same thing. So they think they have to do it in these foreign countries as well. And it's just one policy that leads to another policy that leads to another policy that eventually kills everything. And, you know, whatever business, farming, lifestyle, all that stuff. So it progresses. It's progressive. It's just progressing the wrong way.
Yeah, and that's the isn't that the point? All these people that at the end of the day they're not farming for food to provide for food to their family or several families in their nearby community, that they're only doing it. They're farming for profit. I mean, this is what we talk about every Friday here. And it's purely done for profit.
Yeah, and they're trying to feed the world instead of their local community. And when you try to go big, you get out of scale. Well, out of scale farming does pollute. Out of scale farming does cause problems. You know, you have to understand that. And you live at the end of the Mississippi River.
Yep.
You see that. You see the high cancer rates and stuff and everything else because it all flows downstream, and it's just, you know, it's kind of a culmination of everything we've discussed. And instead of, you know, letting, because I'm sure a lot of those native farmers were doing practices that worked for them and were sustainable and possibly regenerative, where they weren't, you know, having to destroy acres of land to keep making the same, you know, profit over and over and trying to feed the world.
That's right. And by the by, Brian, and I know Dan Money knows this because he's a chemist. If you want to use or you want to restore the stuff that they took out of all the dishwashing and laundry detergents, Dan, all you got to do is go to the paint store, if it's legal in your state, and buy a box of trisodium phosphate. One teaspoon of trisodium phosphate for a load of laundry, and bammo, you've just restored all the phosphor that they took out.
Oh, well, I'm not a chemist, but I have made a lot of laundry detergents. Well, it depends on where you are, Mediter. You'd have to do that in the tri-state area because they banned phosphates here 40 years ago. And, we used to have to actually make multiple formulations depending on the area. You know, they say that about gasoline. We had to do it with laundry detergents as well. All the way back in the 80s, I was doing it. So you're better off making your own.
Yeah. Now, I was reading in the... Now, you're better off making your own laundry detergent?
Sure.
So what, pig fat, lye, and phosphorus?
Well, yeah, it depends on what you want to make it, an alkaline base, which is what most of them are. So you do like I do, and, you know, because I have access to things and I collect things, you know, I got 400 or 500 pounds of soda ash tucked away and all.
I've
played with it, and I've made some, and it's like, okay, well, you know, when the time comes, if it's not in the store, or they're going to do like they're doing with my feed prices and say, yeah, you can get a little jug here, but it's $37, I'll say, yeah, and I'll go make some. So, you know, I'm just that way. I'm just that honorary miniature. As the Pope keeps saying, Mr. Mundy, please, you are too utilitarian.
Mr. Mundy, please, you act like utilitarian. You must go back to lands at some point in time. Everything not made for Mundy to make profit from. 1/3 of the farmlands lay dormant. Back to Sri Lanka for just a moment. 65% of the farmers face crop losses. Small farmers bore the brunt of the burden, reported a 50-60% decrease in yield. Now, Brian, I just wanted to. I actually brought the book with me this week. Last minute, I was on the way out the door. I went back inside. I said, "Wait a minute. Let me grab." One Straw, The One Straw Revolution. Folks, get a copy of this book. It's just a pleasure to read. You know, he writes about Brian, and I'm reading him in his book, and I'm going like, wait a minute. Masanobu Fukuoka. Either Brian Koch stole the ideas from Kukawaka or Kukawaka stole the ideas from Brian. When you get to the chapters of Four Principles of Natural Farming, Mr. Koch, and I go, wait a minute, I've heard this before. And he just ticked them off exactly as you do.
Yeah, well, it's really not a secret. It's just...
But how did it get so out of practice? Because he's talking about all the farmers in Japan were destroying their lands with chemicals. This is in the 1930s.
Well, a lot of things made it easier. You know, it was for convenience. And convenience kills you. I don't know.
Okay, listen.
Explain it.
All right. So he writes in this chapter, all right, the chapter before the four things to do. The phenomenon of these great swarms of spiders, which appear in the rice fields in the autumn and, like escape artists, vanish overnight, is still not understood. No one knows where they come from, how they survive the winter, or where they go when they disappear. And so the use of chemicals is not a problem for the entomologist alone. Philosophers, men of religion, artists, and poets must also help to decide whether or not it is permissible to use chemicals in farming and what the results of using even organic fertilizers might be. And then he says, now that's an interesting proposition. Then anyone get the townspeople together that all this crap is going to go into the groundwater, Brian, and you know this better than anyone else, and into the water supply. Did anyone gather them together and go like, hey, are you guys okay with us poisoning the water? You're going to get more corn, but the water is going to turn yellow and it's going to have to be purified and you're probably not going to be able to drink it.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't.
Think about that.
But and he's writing this in the late 1950s. He continues. Now listen to this. And this applies directly to Sri Lanka. We will harvest about 22 bushels, that's 1,300 pounds of rice, and 22 bushels of winter grain from each quarter acre of this land. If the harvest reaches 29 bushels, as it sometimes does, you might not be able to find a greater harvest as you search the whole country of Japan. Since advanced technology had nothing to do with growing this grain, it stands as a contradiction to the assumptions of modern science. Anyone who will come and see these fields and accept their testimony will feel deep misgivings over the question of whether or not humans know nature and of whether or not nature can be known within the confines of human understanding. The irony is that science has served only to show how small human knowledge is. I mean, dude, that is worth printing out on a poster board and tacking up on the wall in every post office in America.
Yeah.
And every feed store in America.
For sure. The thing is, when you do start doing it like that, everybody tends to talk about you. And I think our craving for human respect gets in the way, and we end up not wanting to look crazy or sound crazy.
But Mr. Fukuoka is not crazy, Mitter Mundy. I think that's a really good summation that you claim to know science, but how come your science is always changing?
Well, it's because the interest change. I mean, we do know that one of the, and this is things that give me pause. I'm trying to figure out where they're going with it.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that a lot of this use of this method of farming was pushed because of excesses left over from the Second World War. You know, same reason Raytheon started making microwave ovens. Well, we got all this capacity, we got all this stuff and money invested, but what can we do with it? So they come up with these other things. So they started pushing this. And now, you know, then, as Brian said, it makes things easier. It also makes things somewhat more consistent, at least for a period of time. So, you know, then people get used to that. But if they're trying to, now they're trying to obsolete it. So now you got a whole group of industries that are going to not profit from this. So what's their interest in it? Like the Monsantos and the Bayers, which is Monsanto.
Right.
I'm just trying to figure out, you know, who's pushing who, or is it really just our ineptitude of the planet and how we're running things, and it's all coming to a head now? I mean, you want to read an interesting thing, maybe you've read this literature, you want to go back where human hubris and ego got in the way of trying to do something agricultural, go read about Henry Ford's Brazilian experiment trying to grow.
Oh, with the rubber trees.
Oh, yeah, the Fordlandia. Go read about Fordlandia. I mean, you want to talk about people. How hard could this be? I make a lot of money. I could grow rubber trees. Any idiot can grow rubber trees. As a matter of fact, I'll show them how to do it and how to live and how to make a better life. You know, I mean, it's a very good microcosm of a lot of these things that we're doing today. So, number one, it shows that we never learn. And number two, it kind of shows you the failure all the way to the end, which is what we're rapidly approaching on some of these other things. Anybody go look up Fordlandia. Go read it. It's an easy read.
Yeah, I think we talked about it before here on Free Farm Friday. This is Free Farm Friday, and our master farmers, Dan Mundy of the Kingdom of Mundy. What is your kingdom's name?
Eleutheria.
Eleutheria.
Yes, it's my wife actually researched that. It means being able to disregard anything that does not lead to salvation.
I love it. Hey, by the way, shout out to Ross McKnight of Backwater Fogua. On Sunday, Ross, Dan, you would love this. Ross bought me a Muscovy duck that he had He had plucked the feathers and everything, de-gutted it, and he deboned it for me.
Ooh.
You say ooh again. That joker, yeah. It was a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be. I'm like, I can cut this thing into four things and do some, I can stuff it and roll it up and tie it off with some butcher twine and bake it or barbecue it. So I'm
put a few pieces and try different things.
Yes, I want to thank Ross for the duck, and I'm looking very much looking forward to cooking it. But now back to Sri Lanka. This is what the story says, Brian. Worse yet, the fertilizer ban has hit the tea industry, the second highest export. Sri Lanka exported $1.24 billion worth of tea in 2019. Those exports paid for 71% of the country's food imports up until 2021. After the April ban on nitrates, the tea industry crashed with production and exports down 18% to a 23-year low. So basically, if you're just joining us, the country of Sri Lanka, bought Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum's Green New Deal. You will have the revolution in the agriculture, and the people in the farms will flourish, and you will be happy. The exact opposite, exactly as Mark Morano and I and thousands of other people have been saying for 30 solid years now, Brian. These environmentalist kooks have been, they've never changed their stripes. They were primarily driven, they were Fabian or Faustian socialist, pick one, turned communist. They are the people and the mindset that escaped the collapsing Soviet Union. You know where they wound up? Here. And in England. And in the European countries. You know what they wound up doing? Being experts. That's right. They got high-paying gigs at universities and think tanks all over the place. And all they did was bring their communism here. This has never been about the planet. It's never been about air. It's never been about water. It's always been about communism. It's always been about central economic and social planning and organization with an eye firmly cast and staring at the cult of death and all of them being a bunch of Malthusian, humankind-hating wackos. And now that there are actually countries that are dumb enough, stupid enough, foolish enough to believe that you actually can defy nature and that you don't need wood or anything like that to create heat or don't need to burn complex hydrocarbons to heat water up to drive steam turbines to generate electricity. Now people are actually dealing with the consequences of communism, of green communism. People in Sri Lanka are going to starve. There are going to be starvations here. You can expect to start seeing Sally Struthers on television doing commercials for the starving people of Sri Lanka very soon, but it's not limited to Sri Lanka. If the Danish farmers don't hold their ground, if they aren't successful, there are going to be people this winter that are going to starve to death and are going to freeze to death in the Netherlands. Did you see that the European Union, I mean, how stupid do they think people are, actually adopted natural gas and nuclear energy as part of the Green New Deal approved methods of generating electricity? And they're going like, well, I actually agree with both of those. We don't have an issue with that. But why are they doing it? Because they can't just come out, Brian, and kill a billion people in a year. Now, don't forget, they want to kill 6.5 billion. That's the total. But they can't just come out and kill a billion of us in a year. Maybe a couple of hundred million a year? They can get away with that. And that's exactly what is happening, and that's what we're seeing. Unfortunately, it may be too late for some people, Mitter Koch.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, it's going to come to a neighborhood near you. I mean, we're stupidly going down the same path. You know, we created all these supposed agencies to fight the Dust Bowl and drought and climate, but we really haven't done anything in the past 70, 75, 80 years to fix any of that. You know, they're finally starting to tell people to go regenerative, but I mean I think it's all a collusion to, you know, for the same goal. And, you know, we're just too, I think part of it is the hubris of just individual Americans to think it's not going to happen here. The problem is it is starting to happen here. We're just too cozy and locked up in our bougie developments to see that. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, just driving around and going to the different areas, in these more affluent areas, the grocery store shelves aren't empty, but you go to other ones and they are. And it doesn't make sense. So it's kind of like, you know, when we give a warning, hey, this is coming, and people go to the grocery store, well, I'm not seeing it. You know, it just kind of keeps them comfortable, if you will. And, you know, it translates into apathy almost, or, you know, the calling us a conspiracy theorist or something else. But you, you, get out on the land and see what's happening. I mean, I just drove last Sunday or Saturday through eastern New Mexico and western, you know, upper western panhandle of Texas and down through the hill country into San Antonio. And you know what?
What?
70% of the fields that grow cotton or grain sorghum or corn or anything else weren't even planted. 70%.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's either too dry or fertilizer's too high.
All right.
This was including ground that could be irrigated.
Let's segue and use that to get into our second topic here on Free Farm Friday. So the solution, Brian and Dan, is, and we can pray that the people of Sri Lanka, mid or Monday, will find this out before it's too late, is to look. They're going to have the nitrates restored, but they're also going to have to learn what their ancestors knew. They're going to have to turn back to the land and back to regeneration. And they're going to have to figure it out how to work with nature instead of trying to play nature. And that's the last thing we're going to say about that, Mitter Monday. I'm sure that you concur. And I didn't hear any mention of livestock being mentioned in any of the farming that they have going on in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, I didn't notice anything. I didn't even see anything in any of the articles. So who knows? I don't know how big that even is there, unless it's just for very local use. But you know, maybe that's what they normally buy with that 71% from the tea they sell. I don't know.
His livestock. Now let's use this as a pivot point, as we can say in the business, to segue into droughts and heat waves. Now, the first thing that we're going to say and we're going to talk about here is that most people are just assuming that, except, what an irony, Brian, who is it that doesn't assume that the droughts and the heat waves are the product of climate cycles? It's gruesome Newsom and the humankind haters in California and the other states, the libtards, the ones that want to force feed us roach cakes and whatnot. They're the ones going like, man, this is a result of evil men driving SUVs and burning fossil fuels. So they have the right target. They're blaming the right cause, I think, man, but they're blaming man for all the wrong reasons. Would you agree with that?
Me or Mr. Monday?
That's you, Brian.
Okay. I would agree. And I think, you know, our so-called need to switch to an industrial agriculture system has done that. Like I said, if carbon is the actual problem, well, we understand through our regenerative agriculture that we've been talking about for almost 2 years now that carbon belongs in the soil to build soil organic matter. And every time you break that ground up and you smell that beautiful smell, because it does smell good, I'm not going to lie, but every time you smell that smell, that's your soil organic matter burning up and getting thrown into the atmosphere.
Yep, that's why it smells good, because it's organic.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think, you know, the thing is, I have my doubts with so much of the stuff, because I've been, you know, kind of bombarded over the years, especially all my work on the coastal work and everything, and you know how they talk about sea level rise and climate change and everything. And in Texas, they actually use a term called relative sea level rise.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is they calculate land subsidence, which is very real, that happens on the coast. You can see it. You can go to there's a neighborhood in Baytown, Texas on Galveston Bay that is completely underwater now because they drilled all the water out underneath the ground and the hydrocarbons and everything else, which was kind of propping the land up, and it sunk. That wasn't the sea level rising. That was it sinking.
That's right. And, you know, Brian, there was is the mayor of Dusonia in the chat room? Maybe, Rusty, if you remember the title of that show that you watched that you and I talked about, and I still love telling people a story about, on the History Channel or National Geographic, Brian and Dan. There was a show that Rusty watched, and the story is this, talking about subsidence. the Mississippi River. There's a fort down what used to be the mouth of the river. It was built during the War of Northern Aggression or something. And before the levees were built, and we forced the river to go where we wanted it to go and stopped it from flooding over on the banks every spring from the snow melt up north, the river would overflow all the way, you know, down into the Gulf of Mexico and all throughout Louisiana and all the states that it flows through. And it would basically, it would drop sediment every year. And what these guys found when they studied this subsidence back in the 90s, what they found was there was a consistent, Brian, a consistent level of soil. And it didn't matter if it flooded 4 feet 1 year and 2 feet the next. Nature worked it out. And they would find, as they dug down, they would find stuff in the soil, like 2 and 3 and 4 feet down. They'd find stuff from 60 years ago, which would mean that this was a natural process of subsidence, but nature and the river and the runoff from the river was basically holding the land level, sea level, if you will, Brian, at the exact same level every single year for a millennia, Brian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you build a neighborhood in a floodplain, you don't want that neighborhood to flood anymore, so you cut off the natural, distribution of those sediments that come downstream, we're paying now for something that we thought was a good idea, you know, years ago.
That's right,
and.
Go ahead.
Did we know better? I have a time machine to go back and see if we actually knew better or not. But part of me says we were. We just had to throw people in places to give them places, pretty places to live.
Well, Dan Money, you and I have talked about climate change and climate impacts and what have you here. The subsidence, because it's a natural process, is replenishing that part of the Mississippi River Basin every single year. Where there is land instead of there being water is through an unnatural process or a process that is aggravating the nature. This is going to change evaporation patterns. Changing evaporation patterns is ultimately going to change wind patterns. So you could say that by damming the river or by levying the river up, as it has been since 1931, the Mississippi River, you could say that the natural process, that the beauty of the Mississippi has been completely abrogated here. So is man responsible? Well, he kind of is. And if you're changing, as I talked about on Wednesday's show, 43 miles of Louisiana coastland is lost now. Since 1812, when we were admitted into the Union, we've lost 43 miles of coastland, most of it in the last century. Why? Because of the levee system, the Corps of Engineers, and us insisting that the Mississippi River travel where we want it to go.
Well, again, the arrogance of man, and I guess you can call it terraforming literature. We don't.
It is terraforming, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is. It's a bait and switch. I mean, let's face it, whether it's done out of desperation or it's done by design, they're not going to want to admit or even try to understand those that want to control or try to govern or try to manipulate this. They're not going to want to say, hey, we made a mistake with the levees. We got to redo this. They're not going to say that. They're going to have to do a bait and switch and say it's all your fault because you've got a big SUV. And that's much easier. It's better to sell that and try to blame it on you as an individual than try to blame them on. So that's it's all a game. Now, how many people actually understand that, and how many people just flow with it because it's the trendy thing to do? That's up for debate, and I don't know that it even matters. And if we're not going to be able to be true and understand what we're doing and what we've done, then there is no way to fix it. in our lifetimes. I don't, you know, I had to be always down Dan here, but I mean, I don't know how we're going to fix that. We may be able to create our own, do our own terraforming in our own little community if we get the right places. But
you know what my solution is? If I ran for governor of Louisiana, if it's still a state that looks like it looks today, in 2 years, my campaign platform would be pretty simple. Consecrate the state to the Immaculate Heart and the Sacred Heart and blow holes in all the levees beginning at the Arkansas line all the way down to the Gulf and kick the Corps of Engineers out of our state. And we're going to reclaim our 43 miles of coastline that we lost, and we're going to let the river and the Red River rebuild them. May take a century, but we're going to get them back. Meanwhile, we're going to go ahead and claim them. Now, Mitter Koch, pursuant to what we just talked about, that is a climate change. But the nature Nazis aren't screaming about that one. That is a real legitimate climate change. There was another climate change at the end of the 19th century towards the end of the 19th century, cattle was chosen over bison as a source of beef, as a source of red meat. When cattle were chosen over bison, okay, that was the first decision. Then it was like, well, we have no use for the buffalo other than for the Indians because they seem to like them. And so what did we do, Brian? We chased the buffalo off of all the wildlands, the beautiful, lush, alfalfa wildlands of Arizona and New Mexico. That is part of what created that Dust Bowl that you talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, it has a big thing to do with it, because when you take free roaming animals off and want ones that you want in pasture, you fence off the land, you cut off supplies, you start plowing, you start disturbing, it's all these things that we don't want to do in our regenerative system. We do them all, and they start adding up. And eventually they're going to catch up with you, especially when you get in the climate where, you know, you get less than 20 inches of rain a year. They call them brittle climates. If you are a practitioner of holistic management, these brittle environments, the more brittle they get, the more susceptible they are to the bad practices. So you see drought occur faster. I'm a firm believer that we create our own droughts, and I'm not saying just the way I manage my cattle, and I see others that do it similarly or even better than me. They still have grass right now. They still might have to destock, if it eventually doesn't rain, but they still have grass. Where these other people who kind of just dump the cows out and let them, do their thing and pick and choose. There's long lines at the sale barns and stuff because they're trying to liquidate these herds because they can't feed them, and it's unsustainable and expensive to try to feed hay this time of year.
So is this what's keeping the price of beef in check? That there are more cows that be driven to the slaughterhouses because they can't feed them?
Yeah, pretty much. And right now, you're still getting a pretty good price because the buyers are still needing the animals. But pretty soon, it's going to reach a point to where instead of that 90 cents you're getting for these older cows, it's going to be 20 cents. And then it's going to be, it's going to be on profit. That's going to be, if you do get rain and stuff, that's going to be the time to buy and restock. But by the time, people recover and things like that, it's going to be too expensive to restock and, rebuild your herd. So when that comes too expensive, people get out and it affects the smaller ones faster. That's what's happened in Sri Lanka. The smaller ones are getting affected first because they don't have the resources or the capital to rebuild when the conditions do come back. Whatever your conditions are, whether it's you're needing to grow grass or able to buy fertilizer again or seed or, whatever that condition is. And so I think part of it is designed to drive the smaller people out of business and push us toward chains and online and all this other stuff that kills local economies.
And this is a at the end of the day, and I know we want to talk about heat, but we're just about out of time. One of the ways that you can learn to deal with heat, extreme heat like we've had here in the South, is if you're talking about farming, is through the use of cover. Another guy, Masanobu Fukuoka, who wrote the book The One Straw Revolution, Brian, he preaches in one chapter, everything he writes about is cover, 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 cover.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's why I strategically plant my gardens near shade. Plants can do, they say full sun on some plants, they can do fine with a little bit of shade, especially right now when, I'm looking at our forecast next week and we've got 5 days of over 100 degrees again.
Again.
And again, yeah. And normally we might see 100 degrees one or 2 days in the summer, but usually our temperatures stay in the low 90s, 91 to 93. We got the humidity, but 91 to 93 really isn't that bad. And, especially if you're getting rain because you're growing stuff. And that rain, the humidity actually keeps it cooler. Well, with the drought, your humidity's lower, so it allows the temperatures to come up. So, keeping that ground covered, not only, utilizing shade from trees, but shading, because you create those microclimates. The more you dig and more you read and watch stuff on regenerative agriculture, you're actually understanding that you're creating a microclimate and your own ecosystem.
That's right.
That's why when you get to some of these regenerative farms that are out in the middle of a bunch of country that's plowed and mismanaged, they are actually, when it does rain, they are getting rain and they're getting more of the rain because it attracts it. And I think I've talked about the ranchers in Mexico down in the Sonoran Desert, one of the driest deserts in the world, or it's definitely in North America. They are on 8 inches of rain a year, but they're in, they're managing cows and running them through there, and the grass is over the height of the cow's back. So, what are they doing differently than the guy across the fence who doesn't have any grass? They're getting the same rainfall, but he's learning now that he's actually getting more of the rainfall because he's attracting, he's negating whatever climate change is going on across the fence.
That is fascinating. Dan Mundy, I know you got to go if you haven't already left. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I got to run.
I know you got
to
run.
I got to get to, but
Really fascinating stuff that even in a micro environment, if your soil is organically and regeneratively healthy, two plots of land that have the exact same amount of rain, which some people may consider a moderate drought or severe drought, the one that has the land that is regenerative and has the cover on it is going to survive, is going to flourish far better or more prolifically than the other land. And you could be able to see it even in a micro environment. Say, 200 acres here and 200 acres or 2,000 acres here and 2,000 acres there.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'd even say on a homesteading basis, if you remember when you were starting your bougie corn plot there, and I said to you, put some fast-growing something in between there and let the corn help shade it, because you start doing that companion planting. There's a number of reasons to do companion planting, but one of the reasons is to let each of the various ones help each other. And there's also companion planting about some, if you are watering and you're doing irrigation, you have some plants that need more, some that need less. Well, you can do companion planting with that and let, it'll help even itself out. And of course, the next thing to do, Mike, is maybe you got to start growing a few percentage of what you want or what you're growing that's drought resistant. Well, I don't normally eat that. Well, learn.
When I am firmly ensconced on the homestead, we're going to plan basically menu planting and figure out how and what to grow, what year, and we'll actually have to make a schedule. Hey, Dan, I want to thank you for being part of another great Free Farm Friday, Mitter Monday. Thank you. God bless you, brother.
Take care, guys. You too. God bless everybody. I'll see you next week.
All right. And Brian, same to you. But what Dan Mundy preaches about there's another part to being a locavore, as the nature Nazis call it, and that is you have to eat to what your area actually produces by seasons.
That's right. And, you know, I think Mitter Mundy has said it so many times, you know, why do we want raspberries in December?
You know? You're not going to get raspberries.
Or fresh raspberries. I'm sorry. You can can them and turn them into a jam or whatever.
All of you that are in Free Fire Friday fans, you need to think about these things. And by the way, upontheserocks.co, you can list your homestead. And then everyone should do this. Everyone that is working on a homestead, go list yourself and what your kingdom name is so that everyone can go to the directory that's there, the New Christendom Trades and Skills, Trades and Vocations and Businesses, or Vocations and Trades Directory. If you're trying to do any of this, you should be in the directory so that local people can find you. And I would just say, because we're out of time now, but Brian, I did my first harvest of bucket potatoes, and I lost four pretty large potatoes that basically, when I pulled them out of the dirt, when I was dumping the bucket, I disintegrated in my hands, and boy, did they stink to high heaven. What was the cause of that?
Those may have been what you started from.
Okay. But we got about 10 pounds, and we ate some Sunday, and they were delicious.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, we're you know, they're trying to figure out how I'm going to do mine next year. So, you know, I'm already planning because we love those things, and they're just really good to have. You know,
I told Mitch Chur, I said, now that we know we have a decent idea of how many weeks we're talking about to do the whole thing here in Louisiana. And we planted red potatoes. We had red potato splits here. We should be able to grow them quarters of the year, right?
Yeah, and where our zone, you can start them in February and harvest them in May.
Yeah, so. And what you would want to do, and I was telling when I was telling Maggie, is we need to figure out, okay, we need 10 pounds or we need 20 pounds a month. Okay, so we need four buckets, right? So four buckets, if we're going to get about 10 pounds between two buckets, okay, that's fine. And there's a picture in the chat room if y'all want to see our potato harvest. And look, they are absolutely delicious. What I was telling her is that then we figure out, okay, so we're going to plant these four buckets, and then in 4 weeks, we're going to plant four more. And we'll do that for a rotation so that we have a constant little crop of potatoes, but I don't need to do the buckets now at Walsingham West, Brian. All I need is a plot of ground that we can section off into micro plots, if you will, and bales of hay and potato slips, and I can grow mine like you grow yours.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, if you remember my talk about, you know, using your tools in context. You know, a little bit of tillage to put those potatoes on the ground doesn't hurt either. You know, just make sure you cover crop it well and everything and keep it covered with that hay. Because I found out that a little bit of, you know, contact with just that ground, I had more potatoes in those areas. So
you don't want to get a tine that's digging down 6 inches and tilling the whole darn thing up. You just want to break it. You just want to break it is all you want to do.
Just a light disturbance. And, you know, cover crop it well beforehand, keep it covered, and then once you're done, you know, plant something behind it. I planted, I've got my potato plot this weekend, I think, after I do stuff, I'm going to plant what I call my chaos mix, which is just a bunch of vegetables, like 40 different types of vegetables and everything else in the seed mix, and I'm going to grow that just to not only build the soil, but to have a little bit of harvest and protect that ground, and then I'll come back next year with something else in that plot. So it just, you know, it's just, you know, you keep it going and you plant for the season. You know, I'm about to start planting a bunch of, you know, melons and squash and stuff and pumpkins because those are good and those will last through the winter time too when you store them. So it's just, you know, that idea of keeping things going. But I also have to, I'm going to extract honey this weekend as well. So I'm hoping I get about 75 pounds. So we'll see.
Hey, Brian, thanks for another great Free Farm Friday. Have a great weekend. God bless you and Suzanne, and happy belated birthday to Zita. And we shall talk soon, brother. And people can reach Brian in the Signal Group, Free Farm Friday Signal Group. If you need to figure out how to get in it, go to upontheserocks.co. Click on the directory. Dan Mundy and Brian Cook are both in the directory. You'll have no problem finding them. You can contact either one of them by text message, phone, or by email. All right, brother. God bless you. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good, Mike. God bless you all. Take care.
All right, you too.